Welcome to this episode of 60 Second Retail, a BDO podcast keeping you in the know on events and trends in the retail and consumer products industry impacting your bottom line in just a few short minutes.
Hello and welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Natalie Cutler, national leader of the Retail and Consumer Products Industry Group at BDO. Real estate has been under a microscope in recent years, with many questioning whether the traditional mall format could keep pace with shifting consumer behavior and rising competition. But new data suggests a more nuanced story. Recent results from Simon Property Group point to rising occupancy, stronger sales productivity, and continued leasing demand. So at first glance, those are the kinds of signals you'd expect to drive expansion. However, what we're seeing is something a little bit more complex, where momentum doesn't necessarily translate into new development, and where retailers are making longer-term bets in a still very uncertain market. Today, we're joined by Ross Foreman, Managing Director in our Strategy Innovation Group at BDO. And Ross is here to help us unpack what's really driving these trends and really what they reveal about the evolving role of malls in today's retail landscape. Welcome back to the show, Ross.
Hi, Natalie.
Ross, so we're seeing some compelling new data from Simon Property Groups where occupancy is up to 96% sales per square foot, nearing $820, and leasing demand accelerating across both new and established retailers. So when you take a step back, what's the real signal in this data about the health of the mall right now?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the headline numbers, they're generally impressive. But what stands out to me is the breadth of demand behind them. So Simon, CEO, made a point of saying this isn't just concentrated in their flagship or what they call their fortress centers. It's broad-based. It's spanning new concepts, legacy brands, luxury dining, and local tenants. And it's across every geography. That tells you physical retail at the right locations still has real pricing power. I mean, right now in today's market, sales per square foot up nearly 12% year over year with base rent growing 5.2% on top of that. It's those two lines moving together that confirm retailers aren't just holding space. They're generating returns that actually justify the rent. At 96% occupancy, there is essentially no structural slack left in a premier mall portfolio. The vacancy that exists, it's largely strategic. Landlords are holding that space for a better tenant. It's not because they're struggling to fill it.
It's really interesting, this whole phenomenon, right? With increasing rates, with increasing occupancy, and with metrics like these trending upward, you might expect a wave of mall developments. But that's not what we're seeing here, is it? What's holding the market back from new builds?
Well, it's like so many things. It comes down to the economics of building something new versus optimizing what already exists. Construction costs have risen dramatically. We know tariffs on steel and structural materials, I believe, are running some 25 to 30% above pre-pandemic levels. And financing costs, I mean, it's eased somewhat, but are still elevated compared to the year when most of these malls were built. So when you combine these factors all together with the permitting timeline and the entitlement risk in almost every market, a new ground-up regional mall, it doesn't pencil. But here's the important nuance. The capital, it's not sitting idle. I mean, Simon alone has over $1 billion of redevelopment projects underway right now across 29 different centers. The industry is deploying capital. It's just being deployed towards existing assets.
So let's double click on that, so to say, right? So if demand and traffic is there and the money is there for expansion, why is the industry leaning towards reconfiguring these existing spaces, whether it's open-air formats or mixed-use formats, instead of just building new and closed malls?
I think there's several reasons, and they reinforce each other. First is accessibility. So you think about an open air center, it just lets you park directly in front of your destination. You get in and out quickly. You don't have to navigate parking garages or walk along a long interior corridor. And that aligns with how today's shopper, particularly millennials and Gen Z consumers, want to move. They're there for a specific experience, not necessarily a day-long expedition. And then secondly are the operating economics. Enclosed malls carry significant fixed costs. There's HVAC, there's interior maintenance, climate control for the entire structure. Open air formats eliminate a large portion of that overhead. And those savings flow through to the landlord margins and, of course, ultimately to tenant occupancy and cost sustainability. And third, mixed use simply unlocks more value. When you layer residential units, medical offices, hotels, or something like an entertainment venue onto a retail footprint, you create a destination and it drives foot traffic beyond just the shopping hours. That's diversified revenue base makes the asset, it just makes it more resilient.
Right. So one of the more surprising data points from Simon's report, if we can go back to that for a second, is that retailers locking in leases 3 years ahead of expiration. I would guess that's probably a new phenomenon. And that's a significant commitment in what we may say is somewhat of a volatile environment. So what's driving this level of confidence and what are retailers betting on when they make that kind of early commitment? Like what has to go right operationally for these early decisions to pay off?
Yeah, it's truly a calculated risk management move on the retailer side, as much as it signals some kind of confidence. So you think about what a 3-year early renewal actually secures. It's location certainty in a market where vacancy is at premier properties is effectively zero. If you're a retailer and the center you're in is outperforming, you can't assume that the space will be available on your timeline. Renewing early locks in your footprint before the landlord has the leverage to reposition it to someone else. But certain things do have to go right. So consumer spending needs to hold, supply chains need to remain manageable, and the retailer's own omnichannel strategy, it has to keep driving traffic to the store, to the physical stores. Simon completed more than 75% of its 2026 leasing expirations in the first quarter alone. It's pretty incredible, right? That's significantly ahead of historical pace. Retailers are clearly not waiting. The ones making these commitments are betting at the physical store remains the center of gravity for customer acquisition and the brand experience for a long time to come.
Yeah, definitely. It'll be very interesting to see how the remainder of the year unfolds. So as we look ahead, I know we very often talk about A malls, B malls, and sometimes we even talk about the average C mall. As we look ahead, do you think that the gap between the premier malls and maybe the underperforming malls will continue to widen? And what happens, to the properties that are thriving from the ones that are struggling to attract tenant and traffic? Like what separates the two of them?
Well, without question, I think there's going to be this gap and probably the gap will increase. Premier malls versus the underperforming. I saw a interesting point that CBRE in their 2026 retail outlook, they explicitly project widening performance gaps by format and location. The data is already stark. Class A malls running above $500 in annual sales per square foot carry vacancy rates less than 5.6%, while C properties are well above 14 or 15%. That divergent, it's not closing, it's just accelerating. So what separates the winners? I think there's three things. Locations in generally higher income areas, densely populated trade area, a curated tenant mix anchored by experience, meaning dining, wellness, entertainment, rather than the traditional or legacy department stores. And a landlord with the capital and the willingness to continuously reinvest. Cushman & Wakefield is tracking 50 significant mall redevelopment projects nationally right now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The properties that are thriving are the ones where the landlord stopped thinking, how do I fill this box with retailers and started asking, how do I build a destination that people want to come to and stay and, of course, come back to? That mindset shift is what ultimately determines which side of that performance gap a property lands on.
And, you know, when you said there are three things, I thought you were going to say location, location, location. It is clear that the mall retail isn't simply rebounding. It's recalibrating from early lease commitments to the shift towards reimagined mixed use space. Today's strategies point to a market that's less focused on expansion and more focused on precision, where success really depends on making the right bets on the right locations and then at the right time. And as the gap continues to widen between high-performing properties and those still trying to find their footing, the decisions being made today will shape what mall retail looks like for years to come. If you found this conversation valuable, share it with your friends and colleagues who are navigating the evolving retail landscape. Don't forget to tune in next week as we continue to break down the trends shaping the future of retail. Thank you and have a great day.
And that concludes this episode of BDO's 60 Second Retail Podcast. Don't forget to tune in for the next episode. To find more information on our hosts, guests, BDO's services, or listen to previous episodes of 60 Second Retail, please visit www.bdo.com/60-second-retail.